episode 26.
It's time to breathe new life into the social entrepreneur by empowering you to make a living through fulfilling work that will impact lives. You'll make money, but more importantly, you'll make a difference. Welcome to the Change Creator Podcast. It's time to build a business with purpose. Now here's your host, Adam Force.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? This is your host, Adam Force. Thank you so much for joining today. Got a real exciting show. You've probably heard the term growth hacking. I know we're all excited to build our audiences, get those early adopters, and really get that first burst. So we're going to tap into just really what is growth hacking and how do we approach it? What are some of the key elements? And to do that, we reached out to one of the managing partners and lead growth hackers over at a company called Rock Boost, and his name is Chris Out. He's got a lot of experience. He does a lot of international talks. He's worked in startups, corporate gigs, you name it. So we got a lot to talk about. We're going to start that in just a second. I just want to share a few updates as we approach 2017. I'll keep them real quick. Just days from now, from this recording, we're going to be releasing the December edition with Dr. Alistair Harris. He's a social entrepreneur awardee through the Skoll Foundation. And then normally we do every other month with our releases, but we're going to go ahead and release back to back and put one out in January because we had a great opportunity to interview Ariana Huffington, and we're going to kick off the new year with Ariana. So some really powerful stuff coming as we start 2017. If you haven't already downloaded the magazine, just go to iTunes or Google Play. Download the app. There's a free edition in there now of one of our archived issues. You can check it out just to get a sense for it. We are going to be evolving our content structure and the design as we approach 2017, so you'll definitely see a difference as we release the Ariana Huffington edition. But you could check out that free edition just to get a sense. And there's also a 30-day free trial. So, don't forget to stop by and leave us a review and a rating. Always helps. And I will leave it at that. Let's dive in and start talking to Chris and see what he has to say about growth hacking. Hey, Chris, thanks for joining the Change Creator Podcast show, man. How you doing?
Doing great, Adam. Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, no, it's a pleasure to have you here, and I think we're all excited to learn from your experience. You have a lot going on, and you know, I just recently came across your company, Rock Boost, so we're going to tap into that. And you know, growth hacking is a hot term right now, so I think everybody is interested in learning how they can start capitalizing on some efforts and how to think about, you know, marketing in today's modern world. So before we dive into all that hot stuff, if you could just give me a little bit of background about, you know, your experience. You have a lot of experience, and I'd like to just give the audience some background on where you were coming from and what led you to Rock Boost today.
Yeah, cool. So I think I can start in the summer of 2011 when I went for an internship to Shanghai. Without any marketing experience, I was working at Motion Global, one of the fastest growing eyewear companies in the world. And I did online marketing over there for 6 months. So over there, I learned really from some really good entrepreneurs how you should be doing marketing. But then my ego got in my way because I wanted to have a master's because all my friends had a master's. And therefore, I went back to Holland, worked at KPMG as an auditor for 1 year, where I quit my job because it turned me completely crazy. Like, the environment was so... Like, I felt so frustrated, and like, people wanted to put me into a certain state of mind and way of working, which was totally not aligned with what I wanted to do. So I quit my job after 1 year to start my first startup with two friends, which completely failed after 1 year. So we had built a product for 1 year. It was an amazing idea. Thousands and thousands of hours and euros we have put into it. But nobody wanted to buy. And then I came across the term of growth hacking. It was summer 2014. And then I really had like an aha moment, like, whoa, this is really what's going to be next in this world. Because here in Holland, actually nobody was talking about it. And I thought, okay, this is what I need to learn about. So I went to the States. I bought courses from all the growth hackers. I've met Sean Ellis in London. And we started Rock Boost in November 2014. And now we have grown the company in 2 years from 3 to 20 people. We have very big clients. I'm speaking internationally now, going to the States next year a couple of times. So it has been a crazy ride in the past 5 years.
Wow, amazing. So 3 to 20 people in 2 years, and now you're traveling around and doing these international talks. What, I guess I'm curious to just dive into that a little bit. So how, like, what was the difference in the failing company that you experienced and then this particular company? So, because I want to know how you grew so fast. Like, how are you bringing people on board? Like, where's the funding coming from to pay salaries? Or did you, you know, how did it all start? Was there co-founders, like stuff like that?
Yeah. So the biggest thing we did with Rockboost compared to our previous company is that we're now solving a pain. What does every company want? They want to grow. They want to earn money. With our first company, we were trying to solve a problem that people didn't experience as a problem. And what I always highlight now in my growth hacking workshops is that 42% of startups that fail, they fail because there's no market need. So if you are now starting a new venture or you have a side hustle, always start, am I solving a pain? Because if you're solving a pain, then there's money to be made. And if you don't do that, then that will not happen.
Yeah, that's interesting. And, you know, I always think, though, too, there are the unique, like I read Guy Kawasaki's books and he talks about having an idea that's jumping the curve, which is kind of like what you're talking about. Solve a big problem, do something unique. And obviously it sells itself in some capacity. But then you think about, I think about like restaurants and all these other sameness type business businesses. And, you know, I just have to wonder, you know, well, there. So if I started a restaurant, you know, I'm doing, you know, there's 1,000 restaurants out there, especially you go to like New York City. So I guess you have to be kind of crazy to get into that business. Do you think it's just, it's not that it's impossible. It just makes it a lot harder. Does that sound right?
Yeah, I think you're right. But I think the thing that I was really, really aggressive on is that I chose my mentors and I was relentless in investing in all their courses. So Ramit Sethi from IWillTeachYouToBeRich.com. I don't know if you know him, but
yeah.
I think I've bought like almost all his courses and I met him in New York last year. Rockboost is an idea that followed from one of his courses.
Gotcha.
Rockboost was set up as a consulting business. So I bought from him the course, How to Earn Your First $1,000. Then after that, when Rockboost was taking off, I bought another course, which is How to Make Six Figures as a Consultant. And I really thought, okay, I can find it out on my own and then make all the mistakes myself. Or I can invest the money that I've been making in learning from people who have already done what I want to do. And it sounds super logical, it sounds super simple, but I don't know a lot of people who would invest 20K of their own money to invest in those courses. And that has changed everything for me.
Yeah, and so when you say you were looking and selecting mentors, it's not necessarily that this is someone you went out to coffee with once a month, but it's someone that you learned from their expertise, whether it's courses, and then over time, maybe, like you said, you got to meet with them and stuff like that. Is that accurate?
Yeah. So I've been reading 3 books a week for 2 or 3 years. So that gives you a very strong foundation, especially if you help companies grow. You, with every problem that they face, you have like a frame of reference which you can use.
Right. I like that. So, because, you know, you hear a lot of people talk about mentors and they are really important. And sometimes they just mix up and they feel like, oh, it's someone that I have to create some partnership with and have, you know, regular phone calls. And I guess that's the case sometimes. But, you know, I've done the same thing where I've taken certain classes from people that are doing what I want to do or have like expertise in a certain field. And it does expedite your process quite a bit when you can learn from those guys if you're willing to invest in yourself. And I think that's a setback for a lot of people, like you mentioned.
Yeah, and so what we do with a lot of clients, we try them to teach the mindset of an investor. Because when you want to grow, you have to invest. And especially when you start, you are the biggest asset. So the knowledge that you have, that will derive if you will move forward or not. Because if you don't know what you're doing, you will not be successful. So you need to be very strategically of who you're learning from, but also be willing to invest. And I've invested like 70, 80% of my income in courses in 2014 and 2015. Like not this year, because like it wasn't necessary anymore, but I was super aggressive on that. And I was lucky to have two co-founders who already had a digital agency where we had a lot of leverage with all the stuff that they already had done.
Yeah.
But why did they want to work with me? It was because I could add value to their business because I had read all those books and followed all these courses.
So you
need to see yourself as an asset and invest in that asset by knowledge. And if you have the knowledge, then you can help people and then other people will help you.
Right. And it seems like you do writing and I see your blog, you have some great articles and stuff like that. So that's another way it helps push people to get their thoughts on paper and build your credibility. What do you think about that?
Yeah, of course. But the thing is, we have Rock Boost now for more than 2 years. We just recently really became serious about writing all those articles, because one of the things that I learned from Ramit was to have a do it later list.
And
when people are starting out, they think they have to do everything. We started Rock Boost, a growth hacking agency, which supposed to be super digital without a website. If you look at our Facebook likes, I think we have 200 or 300 likes.
Right.
And people ask me, okay, why don't you have why don't you have a website? Why don't you have a lot of likes? Because that at this moment, that will not determine if people will buy from us. But a lot of people, when they start out, they think, oh, we need to have a lot of Facebook likes, a lot of people on Twitter. But those people will not give you money. And that's what you need to grow your business. So focus on getting clients, getting revenue, and then the rest will pay for itself.
Yeah, I think that's an extremely important point, because it's super overwhelming, especially for someone who's going at it as a solo entrepreneur. You really can get overwhelmed with all the things that have to happen and you don't know what direction to go. So I love the idea of the do it later list, because you really got to prioritize your efforts. And I was reading, you know, from a couple guys and some people I talk to, they say, listen, the first thing you have to do when you're starting is you need to get adoption. You need to make sales, because otherwise you're not going anywhere. So don't worry about everything else.
Yeah, you're totally right. And what I encountered with my first business, when I told people about the idea, I was super enthusiastic and all my friends and family were like, Chris, this is an amazing idea. You should definitely pursue it. But those were not the people that were voting with their wallet. They weren't giving me money.
Yes, right.
But when we went to the agencies that had to pay money for it, they said, well, this is a bullshit idea. Like, nobody wants this.
Really?
So
wow.
It's like, we need to find people. When we started Rock Boost, we didn't have a website, we didn't have a service, we didn't have anything. We just went to people, hey, we have encountered growth hacking, you want to grow fast, how can we help you do it? And the first thing that we actually tried to sell was a growth audit. And what was the product? We would go to a marketing manager, analyze their past campaigns, and then show them where they went wrong in the past. So,
and that helped? Did that work?
No. No marketer would buy. Like, would you want to buy something where a consultant would come in and then tell your boss where you made all the mistakes?
Right, that's a good point. Yeah.
Nobody wanted to buy that. But when we told them, like, but we will educate you and we will bring in all our knowledge to your company and we will do the measurement for you and the analytics, and then people started to change their mindset, change their reaction, and then there were actually people who said, okay, well, let's get give it a try. And our first client was 1,000 euro for 100 hours of work. So that's 10 euro an hour.
Okay.
We didn't get any money on that, of course. Yeah. But the thing is, we started learning, and it was the first validation that people were actually willing to pay for it.
And you were successful in the project, I assume?
Yeah, we were successful. And then we had a story to new potential clients, like, okay, are you already doing this? Yeah, we're helping them and we're getting these results. Oh, that's interesting. Well, and then we started to sell retainers of 300 euros a month. So a subscription for 300 euros a month. Like, that's still nothing. We were still losing money on it if you look at pure on the project base. But we were learning what we should be doing, what we shouldn't be doing.
Yeah.
And now we have retainers that are more than six figures a year, but yeah. only by moving up the value chain every time.
Right. So you're kind of stacking your success, basically, step by step.
And really focus on the thing is, in your first year, it's not about making money. You need, of course, to make money to validate that what you're doing is working. But your learning is way more important. And I know that everybody says it, but it's really true. We are now launching new countries, and our goal is not to make money in those countries in the first year. It's to understand how should our launch system look like. Because if we understand how our launch system works, then we can launch 10 new countries at once, because we have a playbook for that.
Right. Right. Now that makes sense. Makes sense. So with that being said, I want to just jump over now. And now that we got the how you started and started growing and stuff like that, which is a lot of good insights there. Let's start diving into the idea of growth hacking. And I guess my first question is growth. So growth hacking would be, just for everyone who's listening's, understanding, is really modern, like traditional marketing, but combined, it's like digital marketing combined with, engineering in a sense, looking at data analytics and hacking the way you might use software and things like that. I know you talk about the Airbnb example, which is a good one. I think that was what they did when someone posted something on Airbnb. They were able to make it automatically post onto Craigslist and leverage the Craigslist audience. So is it unique for every company, or can growth hacks be replicated? Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, of course. So when I talk about growth hacking, I always say that there's one word missing in growth hacking. And it should actually be called growth system hacking.
Yes.
Because if you look at the definition of a hack, it's finding a weak spot in a system and exploiting that weakness. But if you look on the internet and you Google growth hacking, people write about examples like, we changed the button from red to blue, and then we sold five times more. Okay, that can be a great hack, but that was in that context. In that growth system, that was the weak spot where they found something which led to their growth.
Right.
And I see so many like wrong advice and wrong things about growth hacking, because people are only focusing on the hacks, on the tools. But like setting up the growth system, the process, and we have developed our own process, the seven pillars of growth hacking. I believe that if you implement a system like that, then it's very obvious where you can find the hack. And you really find the weak spot in your growth system. And you're almost always hacking in the place of your company where there's really an opportunity for growth.
Right, right. Okay. So I guess I'm interested then, if let's say you're starting with a new client, what are the steps that you start taking to figure out how you might be able to help somebody? So you just started talking about doing this process and assessment, and can you delve into that a little deeper to just give us some ideas of, all right, so, you know, let's think about starting, if you were supporting a startup, and rather than a large business with like big assets, right? So you said early on, I know you worked with some startups, and you may still now, but you just had a conversation with somebody and you're going to start supporting them. And so how do you start vetting their company and getting that process set up? Like, what does that look like?
Yeah. So when you are starting with a startup, most out of times there are a lot of unknowns. So you first need to make sure that you change those unknowns to knowns in this context. So what I always want to do is, okay, are they already making money or not? Because if they are not making money, then you really, really have to start at the basis. And are they really solving a pain? If they are making money, then you know, okay, there might be something. But actually, the process is still the same. So first, we look at the mindset of like the company. Are they actually wanting to grow fast? Because I've encountered so many people who said, I want to double next year, or I want to triple my company. And then we explain to them, okay, these are the things that they need to do. And then they didn't want to do it. So if your mindset, if your setting for growth is not right, then I can show you all the tools, all the tricks, but it will not work. Because growth is getting out of your comfort zone, is getting into an uncomfortable situation. And if you don't want to do that, then you can read everything about growth hacking, but it will not work. So that's the first thing we try to tackle. Then we look at, okay, what's the T-shape of the company, the team? Do they have like the right resources? Do they have enough development? Is their marketing knowledge up to speed? And then we give them like a two-day training where we teach them all the concepts. Then we set a one metric together. So we really set a growth goal. We determine, okay, what client worth to you? How much are you willing to invest and to spend to get a new client? And then we really start to look at the market, at the product. Are they really solving a problem? Do they have product market fit? So we send out a survey to their clients, and basically we ask those clients, how disappointed would you be if this company would not exist anymore? And the benchmark that Sean Ellis, the founder of Growth Hacking, said was that it should be at least above 40%. Because companies that have product market fit, they will not lose the customers that they currently have. If you don't have product market fit, then all the new clients that you acquire, they will be gone as fast as you acquired them. So you first need to be sure that you have retention. So we send it out. Normally, average product market fit that we see is between 18 and 22%. So that means that most of the companies don't hit the benchmark, but there might be a segment in their client base which has product market fit. So let's say that we find that women in a certain demographic, they show a very high product market fit. Then the next step is, okay, how can we get more of those type of clients in? Right. And then we look at the 19 different traction channels, and we see, okay, where are they? What does it cost to acquire them in every channel? And then we are constantly optimizing that by doing conversion rate optimization if they have enough traffic and really enough budget to do that. And that's a system we constantly go through. So it's very holistic. And if we find something that's not in place, so we see, okay, there's no product market fit, then we need to do extra research, find out where the aha moments are, where are moments of friction, what does a customer really want?
Right.
So our process is really set up. If this happens, then the next step is this.
Yeah, yeah. And that was going to be a question I had, is if someone doesn't have product market fit, have you ever told the client, like, we don't think we can help you? Or do you feel like that you can help sort out, a situation for any client?
I think that's, you couldn't have asked a more relevant question at this moment, because in a cubicle next to me, one of my team member has a conversation with a startup who has an app. And we did the product market fit survey, and there we really have a conversation like, okay, the situation looks pretty bad. So you completely don't have product market fit. These are all the things you need to do to find out if there might be a pain in the market, and that will cost you a lot of money. So basically at this moment, you need to make a choice. Or you want to go all in and then spend the next 3 to 6 months on finding out if it's going to work or not? Or are you very happy with us at this moment, because we basically showed you for not a lot of money that if you would pursue this, you would lose hundreds of Ks of euros in the next year. So what I did wrong in my first year, we're now actually at the point of helping someone not to make that mistake. And I think we will probably advise them not to pursue with in this direction. A pivot might be possible, but going this direction is not a smart thing to do for them.
Yeah, yeah, that makes sense. It makes sense. I can imagine. I mean, there's lots of I imagine there's a lot of people in that situation. And you know, what if there's a startup that's early on, and you know, I know yet. If someone's, let's say they're in their first 6 months, right? Even the first 3 months, let's make it real early. And they don't have a big audience. So they're just starting to collect emails and go through that whole process, but they don't have a large audience. Let's say they have less than 100 people. How do you then do a survey or determine, or are they just too new to really start this process?
I think you should start the process from day one. So I have no doubt about that. But if you have 100 people, then you can ask 100 people, what problem is this? Yeah. Is this app or is this website solving for you? How disappointed would you be? And of course, from a statistical perspective, if 60 or 20 people would give a certain answer, purely statistically, you couldn't derive a conclusion for that. But it really gives you an estimate on like where it's the smoke, where's the fire?
Yeah.
And that's what in this phase, that's where you're looking at. Like, what are the people doing that are really successful with your application? Who are they? What kind of people are that? What if we put more of those people into your app or in your website? How are they going to react? Because if they react in the same way, then you have validated in a small setting that there might be something over there.
Right.
And if you then go to an investor, like, hey, I see this happening and I need some money to validate this, then you have a much higher chance of success.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. And I guess what a lot of people miss too is really going through that process to narrow things down, test, iterate, pivot, all those types of things, and get real actual information and you not just work off of hypotheses all the time.
Yeah. So, and what I like told one of my team members today is what she was doing, she was trying to find out why the startup would work. And I told her, no, we are here to do the opposite. We should find all the reasons why it wouldn't work. Because if we solve those reasons, then there's actually a chance of success. Because the founders, they will find ways on why it would work. But that's not how the market is assessing them. So we need to find out, okay, why wouldn't it work? Because if we solve those problems, then there's a higher chance of success.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I think Guy Kawasaki makes that comment in his book too about making a list of all the ways and reasons your business could fail so you could start identifying those weaknesses and understanding them, which is interesting that you say that point. So I guess what I wanted to also ask you is what is an example, and you don't have to name companies that you've worked with or anything, I guess a challenge that you've overcome and how you overcame it with them. And I guess I'll just start right there. I'm just curious on a success story that you might have.
And what context would be the most beneficial for your audience? Is it startup?
I guess to identify, yeah, startup. I would say startup. A lot of times, yeah, so our audience is looking to, they might have a business and they're looking to take it to that next level. So like I mentioned earlier, we did a survey, and that is where people's biggest pain point was. So they're trying to, how do I, in a cost-effective way, try to figure out how to start moving the needle? Because I think what a lot of people are trying to do is they want to get out of their current 9-to-5 job and pursue this mission or passion that they have, right? But they're struggling to find ways to get that first burst of adopters for their audience. And so we want to start talking about, maybe you could talk about a startup you worked with and say, here was the challenge and here's how an example of how we overcame it.
Yeah, so I can share you, that's actually one of our early stories.
Mm-hmm.
So this was a startup and they had built a platform for bloggers where bloggers could actually, how would you say that, if they had taken a picture with certain products in it, they could select the product and put like a link on the blog post. Like, if you want to buy this product, click this button.
Right.
But the thing was, for every blog post and every picture, the blogger had to do it manually. But no blogger did it.
Right.
And they couldn't get their hands around it. Like, why aren't they doing it? Because they can earn so much money with that. So I was sitting with their growth hacker and I told him, okay, how many products do we want to have listed in the coming week? So let's say it was 1,000. So he wanted to list like 1,000 products. Okay, so we're not going to focus on Facebook or AdWords or email marketing, no crazy things. You're just going to go to a blogger, and when you see that they have put up a picture on their blog with certain clothes, then you are going to do it for them. And he was like, yeah, why? They can do it themselves. No, you are going to do it for them because you need to eat your own dog shit. Like, you need to find out why are they not doing it.
Right.
He was able to the goal was 1,000 in 1 week, which was a completely realistic goal with the times that they have said, like, hey, it will take a blogger like 2 minutes. They were actually able to list 80 products.
Oh,
because there
okay.
There were so many bugs in their product. But a person that is not using your product will not tell you what's wrong with it.
Right.
So by what we have done is like for 4 weeks, push it every week. Let's see if we can upload more and upload more. And then what happened, we removed every time the bottlenecks and removed all the bugs. And then at a certain point, bloggers saw money coming in from those activities, and then they wanted to do it themselves. Eventually, they pivoted the business model in a very smart way, but they could have never known to make that pivot if they would have not tried to do the product themselves. So by taking a step back, doing it themselves, they found out, okay, where is the pain? How are we not helping them? Then they found, okay, if we do this, then they are successful in that way. So there is a huge opportunity in this direction. They changed their business model, and now they are super successful with that.
That's interesting. So, you know, it's not always necessarily like you have to hack a system like Airbnb did and, you know, do something clever like that. It could just be just understanding your process better and, like you said, identifying a pain point and just kind of then pivoting your business model to adapt to that change. Is that, I guess that's kind of like what you're saying,
yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, you're totally right. And this is also why we are completely different compared to other growth hacking agencies or companies that are teaching about growth hacking. We put such a relentless focus on the system and the process and finding, okay, where's the pain? How are you helping them? And like the hack is always the final step. And I always, I tweeted once where I said, like, a lot of growth hackers focus on the kiss at the wedding. How do you kiss a girl at the wedding? But they completely forget about how do you get to the first date?
right.
Like, how did you meet her father and mother? And how did you propose? Like, it's not about the kiss. It's about all the stuff that happened before. And if you set that up, then you will find the hack.
Right. So you got to set up your process, do the due diligence, and create like a strong foundation so that you can identify, which would then become more obvious, right, what the hack should be. Because now you know really who you're talking to and where the pain points are. And then you could start addressing those things, which becomes the hack. Is that right?
Yeah. And basically what we teach our clients is to look at their business from a growth hacker's perspective. And by using our model, the 7 pillars of growth hacking,
yeah,
if you just follow the model step by step, the model will show you where the hack is.
Gotcha.
And then you try that. And if the hack doesn't work, then you have an answer on an experiment. And then the model will tell you, okay, well, if this wasn't it, then this is the next step. And you make it super easy and simple. And that normally works. But the thing is, like, to have the discipline to follow this, that's the hard part, because almost nobody does that.
Yeah.
Because they see a new tool, a new shiny email hunter tool. Let's try that.
Right.
But that,
right.
That's not what it's about.
No, I agree. And it goes back to kind of prioritizing your efforts and focusing on certain things. And I think I heard you talk about 19 distribution channels. So I think you must have read that book, Traction. Am I accurate in that?
Yeah. And if you look at our model, what have we done? We have taken a look at, okay, what are all the successful companies doing? Yeah? And if something was successful, then there was always somebody else who has written about that. And what I have done, I've taken all those pieces and put it into a new model, which is very holistic, because you can, in the book Traction, they say like 50% is your product and 50% is distribution.
Yeah.
So pillar number 6 in our model are the 19 channels, but the 2 pillars before, they explain how do you work on your product. So we are actually making the Traction model more holistic and put it into a bigger perspective that people can really take action on it.
Right, you're wrapping it in all the other steps. So like you basically are really going to identify who the product market fit is. And once you can get to that, then you're going to start saying, okay, well, where are they? And then you start exploring those traction channels.
Yeah. And the thing is, we use this model for a one person startup, but we also implement the same model in multi-billion euro companies.
Right, right.
But the principles stay the same. It's only how deep you go into the analytics or how deep you go in the traction channels that makes all the difference. But like the seven steps, the seven pillars, they always stay the same.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting, and you did mention mindset for a lot of people and getting out of their comfort zone. And I've heard everyone from Jeff Walker on the product launch and you know, Neil Patel and others, they say that part of like business growth really is having the right mindset. It's just like sports and other things. You got to be in a mindset for growth and open to opportunities that you may be uncomfortable with, they're very unfamiliar with. So it's a big part of the process that I think a lot of people miss is like having that growth mindset.
Yeah, so I would definitely read the book from Carol Dweck about that. A thing that we use a lot is from
Carol
Noah Kate.
Who was that?
Carol Dweck.
Dweck? How do you spell
it? She has done research. D-W-E-C-K, I think.
Okay, and what's the book called? I just want to make sure people can get it.
I need to look that up.
All right, we'll find it. I just wanted to, but it's about growth mindsets.
Yeah, yes, she has a TED Talk on it, so that's definitely worth to check out.
Cool.
And what we also do is the coffee shop challenge from Noah Kagan, one of the growth hackers from Sumo Media, from Facebook. And what's the coffee shop challenge? You go to a coffee shop, let's say Starbucks, and you ask for a 10% discount. And it's not about getting the 10% discount, but it's putting yourself into uncomfortable situation and then find out that you won't be hurt by it. The only thing that I can say is no.
Right.
And I would definitely check out his work because he has written a lot of cool stuff about that. And that's the thing that we do with our clients. We actually give them exercise like this coffee shop challenge to really get them out of their comfort zone and really physically experience that that growth mindset and like really hustle, because it's so easy to say you need to hustle. But during our work, we actually put people into very uncomfortable situations where they have to do this. And in the feedback, they always give back like those exercises. When they told me what to do, I was like, come on, Chris, you are completely crazy by asking me to do this in a growth hacking workshop. But when they did it, they really saw, okay, there is a super sophisticated system behind this and why I should be doing this. And if you have done a thing that's so uncomfortable, when you have to do a new growth strategy or a new tactic or finding out a new tool, and that's not hard anymore, because compared to the uncomfortable thing you have already done, this is easy.
Right. Very cool. Well, Chris, I want to be respectful of your time. I think this was a great conversation, and I can probably sit here and pick your brain all day. But I think you gave lots of good insights, and I appreciate it. It looks like you guys at Rockboost are doing some great work, and I'm happy to see how you guys are picking up traction yourselves. So I want to give you the opportunity here just to let people know, you know, like I said, we have a startup audience, but we also have, you know, seasoned social entrepreneurs that are reading our magazine and looking for ways, you know, they already established, but they want to grow. So these are people that might be interested in getting in touch with you guys to take their stuff to the next level. How do they get in touch with you, and what are some things they can do to start, you know, getting more familiar with your processes and stuff?
Yeah, cool. So what I would definitely do is go to rockboost.com and subscribe to our newsletter, because we share a lot of like all of our strategies. And one of our mindset is everything that we now know, we can share it with you, because the world changes so fast that tomorrow we need to learn new stuff, which we can share again. So we are very open in the processes and all the tools that we have.
Yeah.
So definitely check that out. Take a lot of action on the free stuff that we give, and basically share with us like, okay, were you successful? What went wrong? What went well? And then we can take all the time to help you by moving you to the next step.
Great. And your website is, let me just check here, rockboost.com, guys. So definitely check them out. They got a robust team, all doing great work. Might be something to tap into for sure. So Chris, thanks so much for joining me here today. And if you ever need anything, you know how to reach me.
Thanks, Adam. It was great. Very nice.
Wonderful. All right, take care.
That's all for this episode. Your next step is to join the Change Creator Revolution by downloading our interactive digital magazine app for premium content, exclusive interviews, and more ways to stay on top of your game. Available now on iTunes and Google Play, or visit changecreatormag.com. We'll see you next time where money and meaning intersect, right here at the Change Creator Podcast.